Look, I know the supernatural is something that isn't supposed to happen, but it does happen.
Second hour is on here on American Journal. Might have to finish playing this video on the other side, but we'll at least get to the beginning of it. It's Attorney General Kobach of Kansas announcing a suit against Pfizer for false and misleading marketing, laying out just how dangerous their vaccine really was and the lengths they went to cover up the danger. Let's watch.
Thank you for being here today. We brought together this press conference to make the following announcement, and that is today Kansas is filing a civil suit against the Pfizer Corporation under the Kansas Consumer Protection Act, seeking enhanced civil monetary penalties, damages, and injunctive relief for misleading and deceptive statements made in marketing its COVID-19 vaccine. Pfizer also violated previous consent judgments with the state of Kansas, in which Pfizer promised never to use deceptive information to market their products. Kansas's case is the first of a multi-state collaboration, with Kansas being the first of five states to file suit. Before I go further, let me put this in context. As we all know, during the COVID-19 pandemic, there was a great deal of panic and anxiety. Many people who were elderly or who suffered from various medical conditions had already died when the vaccines became available. And when that time came, when the vaccines became available, every one of us had to make two decisions. Am I going to take the vaccine? And if so, which vaccine will I choose to take? And these decisions were being made in a hurry. In some ways, you could say even being made under duress. In such an environment, it is imperative that Kansans making that decision receive the truth. They needed the truth. All Americans needed the truth. And in multiple respects, Pfizer did not provide the truth. Much of the information in this lawsuit came out as a result of a FOIA lawsuit seeking information from Pfizer that still had not been made public. And it was only a result of that effort that some of the information in this lawsuit is available. I urge everyone to read the 69-page complaint that goes into great detail about the specific statements that were made and the misleading nature of those statements made to Kansas consumers. The following is a quick summary of, I think, some of the four most egregious examples of misleading the public in Kansas. Pfizer marketed its vaccine as safe for pregnant women. However, in February of 2021, Pfizer possessed reports for 458 pregnant women who received Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine during pregnancy. More than half of the pregnant women reported an adverse event, and more than 10% reported a miscarriage, many within days of the vaccination. Pfizer also possessed information from its own October 2020 study on pregnancy in rats, indicating that its COVID-19 vaccine was likely linked to infertility, loss of litters, and stillborn offspring. Number two, safety relating to heart conditions like myocarditis. Pfizer consistently denied any evidence of a connection or safety signal between its COVID-19 vaccine and myocarditis or pericarditis. Indeed, on January 18, 2023, when asked whether its vaccine caused strokes or myocarditis, Pfizer Chairman and CEO Alan Burla stated, quote, "We've not seen a single signal, although we have distributed billions of doses," end quote. A signal that he was referring to as a safety signal, which refers to a negative consequence. However, as Pfizer knew, the United States government, the United States military, foreign governments, and others had found that Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine caused myocarditis and pericarditis. Number three, effectiveness regarding variants. Pfizer also claimed that its COVID-19 vaccine protected against COVID-19 variants, even though data available at the time showed Pfizer's vaccine was effective less than half the time against variants. Finally, transmission. Pfizer urged Americans to get vaccinated in order to protect their loved ones, clearly indicating a claim that Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccination stopped transmission of COVID-19. Pfizer later admitted that it had never even studied transmission of it after its vaccine.
A new extremely important product is now available exclusively at the alexjonesstore.com, Ultimate Probiotic. This is a private label, but even made stronger, of one of the top, highly recommended, highly rated brands out there today. And it's more than just a probiotic. It's got a whole bunch of known natural ingredients that boost your overall gut health and that detoxify and that helps flush out all the garbage in your body. Ladies and gentlemen, with all the attacks on our bodies, you have to understand that the gut is the front line. And if you don't have a strong gut, it's like not having a front door on your house or an engine in your car. The gut is so important. Probiotics are amazing and are documented for their great effects. Get this high-quality probiotic right now, Ultimate Probiotic, 60 billion, at thealexjonesstore.com. And I want to thank you for your support. Now take action at thealexjonesstore.com. And again, I thank you for your support.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, folks. Second hour is on here at American Journal, Infowars.com, band.video. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're going to go back to that announcement. There's about a minute left to play of Kansas AG Kobach talking about suing Pfizer over their false and misleading statements and marketing. But of course, the false and misleading statements aren't the actual crime, right? They were making false and misleading statements about the safety of their vaccine. And as AG Kobach lays out, from infertility to myocarditis, they knew fully well that this was a dangerous and ineffective product. And they killed people with it. They killed people with it, right? So it's not about false marketing, right? It's not about saying it's sugar-free, but actually there's sugar in it. Oops. No. This is inject this into pregnant women knowing that half of their babies die. Okay? So this was mass murder that took place. Myocarditis, if you get myocarditis, you have a 50% chance of dying within 5 years. And they were injecting this into children. Okay? So justice demands more than lawsuits about false marketing. And I believe it's coming, especially with RFK Jr. at the head. We'll go to a statement from him after this. But let's continue with the Attorney General of Kansas just talking about just some of the false claims that Pfizer made to cover up their poisonous injections. Let's continue.
After making these misleading statements, Pfizer also engaged in some censorship attempts. Emails reveal that Pfizer officials coordinated with social media platforms to censor any speech critical of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine safety and effectiveness. It should also be noted that Pfizer elected not to join the federal government's vaccine development program known as Operation Warp Speed and declined that development funding. When asked about that, Pfizer's CEO, Albert Bourla, said Pfizer did not participate in the program in order to, quote, liberate, end quote, Pfizer's scientists and to avoid government oversight of its vaccine development. He also said, quote, they want reports. I don't want to have any of that, end quote. Referring to they, when he said they, he was referring to the federal government. Pfizer's misleading statements contributed to success in marketing its vaccine in Kansas. By February of 2024, Pfizer had delivered over 3.3 million doses of its vaccine in the state of Kansas. This accounted for over 60% of all vaccine doses given in the state of Kansas. This suit is being filed today, and as I mentioned before, it is part of a multi-state effort in which more suits may follow depending on Pfizer's reaction. But this is about marketing products to the public. As I think most people know, the federal government conferred immunity on the vaccine manufacturers for tort suits seeking damages from injuries they received, but that did not free any of the vaccine manufacturers from their obligation to not mislead the public or make deceptive statements in marketing it. So this is principally about the marketing efforts that were made and how they contradicted what the company knew.
Justice is coming. It has to. And again, not to belabor the point, but it's a little different from false advertising. You know, there have been false advertising suits in the past where it's like, well, you claim it's a 8 terabyte hard drive, but actually it's only 7.5 actual terabytes. How can you market as 8? Okay, that's not what this is. This isn't false marketing. This was a these were the lies that you tell to carry out a murder spree. Okay? That's the equivalent here. It's like having a mass murderer, a serial killer, but you charge them with fare evading because on the way to the murder, they hopped on the bus without paying. It's like, well, that was just one little tiny crime that contributed to the effort you were taking to murder millions of people. So that's the actual crime the justice must contend with. And boy, the pharma CEOs are not looking forward to a Trump White House, I'll tell you that. The story's in InfoWars. State of panic. Top pharma CEOs call emergency meeting after Trump win. RFK Jr. vows to gut FDA. That story from Jamie White on InfoWars. We've got the video of RFK Jr. making this statement, but the rumor is the top five CEOs of major pharmaceutical companies have reportedly convened an emergency teleconference in response to Donald Trump's historic election win, according to reports. Sources tell me top five CEOs of pharmaceutical companies are holding an emergency teleconference at 1 p.m. A lawyer has confirmed that everyone is in a state of panic, claimed Jamal Hawley, a New Jersey assemblyman and advisor to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Yeah, they should be. And I want to remind progressives out there, you hate these guys too. You know that, right? Do you remember that? Do you remember how you hate these guys? Do you remember how Big Pharma was like your number one enemy when you were all Bernie Sanders reporters? Do you remember that? Okay, so you might be in the impression that like these Pfizer CEOs that rescued us from COVID, they're convening a meeting because, you know, they are in charge of public health and they're, you know, very sophisticated and intelligent and capable, and they've been working their fingers to the bone just trying to keep you healthy and safe. Because they love you, and now they're scared that Trump is going to stop them from making everybody healthy and helping doctors. And big bad Trump just hates health. You know, whatever you people believe these days, I don't even know how you rationalize this. But I want to remind you, these people are the worst people in the world. These are the people that work with the insurance companies, that work with the hospitals to rise, you know, to raise healthcare rates, to extort their monopoly on the pharmaceutical industry. These are despicable capitalist pigs. I want you to remember that, socialists. Okay? So what this actually is a bunch of corporate criminals getting together and panicking because the sheriff is back in town. Because they're not going to be able to get away with their mass murder for long. Okay, so don't let the mainstream media, funded entirely by pharmaceutical companies, convince you that this is because they're great patriots and loving people and just want to help and big bad Donald Trump isn't letting them. You used to understand. You used to get it. You used to be on the right side of this thing. These companies are despicable. Donald Trump and RFK Jr. are going to crack the whip and punish them for their crimes. And that's a good thing. We can all agree. Let's go to this video of RFK Jr. talking about potentially taking over the FDA, please.
You say clearing out the corruption in your terms. Would that mean clearing out the top level federal service workers that are currently at the FDA and the CDC?
In some categories, I would say.
What does that look like? Yeah.
In some categories of workers, there are entire departments like the nutrition departments at FDA that have to go. That are not doing their job. They're not protecting our kids. Why do we have Fruit Loops in this country that have 18 or 19 ingredients, and you go to Canada and it's got two or three?
Would you eliminate any of the agencies?
To eliminate the agencies, as long as it requires congressional approval, I wouldn't be doing that. But I can get the corruption out of the agencies. This is what I've been doing for 40 years. I've sued all those agencies. I have a PhD in corporate corruption, and that's what I do. And once they're not corrupt, once Americans are getting good science and are allowed to make their own choices, they're going to get a lot healthier.
I have a PhD in corporate corruption. It's just so epic. I just am marveling at what this timeline has turned into. the man whose father and uncle were killed by the deep state, is now on a path to a prominent position in the White House with President Donald Trump, where he will be able to exercise massive authority and root out the corporate, governmental, fascistic combination of corruption. It is a very beautiful thing. And again, the market is very happy. The prosperity is already returning. Again, I just want to gaze and marvel at what happened the day after the election. $1.28 trillion added to the stock market in a single day. Green across the board. Bright, effervescent green. A verdant market the day after Trump's election is acknowledged. Remember, I kept saying it because I kept talking to people that were trying to get business things done. And for the last month, there's been no movement. Because no banks want to take the risk because they know that if Kamala Harris gets in charge and does the unrealized taxes, the unrealized gains, and it would change their investment strategy. So now the floodgate is open. They know their money's safe. They know their America's going to be prosperous. They know business is going to be prioritized over whatever DEI programs the federal government wants to shove down your throat. And so the money is flowing. The prosperity is growing. American industry will flower once again in this field of green. It truly is amazing. But, you know, the people that are scared of this stuff, people that are scared of these federal agencies being shut down, you have to look around you at what they've achieved so far and ask yourself, is this worth fighting for? Here's a great example. This woman says, oh, by the way, middle schoolers can't read, high schoolers can't write a proper essay, college students can't differentiate a scholarly-based article versus propaganda, and adults can't tell when a picture is AI. But sure, get rid of the Department of Education, lol. You're telling me that the Department of Education has failed so utterly after 50 years of total control of the education system? Teenagers can't read, high schoolers can't write essays, adults can't tell fact from fiction, college students can't tell scholarly reports from propaganda, and you want to keep them around? I'm sensing a lack of logic here. Now, I've said forever, when it comes to the Department of Education, it's just a matter of how you frame it. If you just say, no, we're returning education to the states, it's not so scary then. But it's the same thing with the FDA or the EPA or the Department of Education. It's like you look around, you go, wow, pharmaceuticals companies are poison and they are making billions of dollars off of our death and destruction. Gee, maybe the FDA isn't fit for purpose anymore. Maybe everybody being inconceivably stupid is not a good reason to keep the Department of Education around. But I don't know. They have some psychological thing, some thing in their mind that it just has them desperately trusting the system, like incapable of considering the system and being wrong. I don't know what it is, but it's a mental illness of some sort that we're having to deal with. Now, let's look at some of the numbers coming out about the election on Tuesday, because there are some very, very interesting patterns to recognize. Kamala won every single state that does not require voter ID. She did not win a single state that requires it. It's insane. This is just being ignored. So that is a very apparent split. Not like, well, she mostly won states with no voter ID and did pretty well in the... No. Every single state that has voter ID went to Trump. Every single state that doesn't have voter ID went to Kamala Harris. Like, that's how the election split. Now, you could say, well, the states without voter IDs are the more liberal ones anyway, so of course she was going to win those. That's certainly a possibility. But the fact is, There is no reason to not have voter ID. There is no reason to have mail-in ballots. These things have to be a priority for the Trump administration on day one, setting about to fix the election system. Obviously, elections are carried out at the state level, but the federal government has ways of influencing that. Now, when you break down the demographics of who voted for who, there's a very interesting and apparent dichotomy on display. Elijah Schaefer posted this saying, "Thank a white person today." But it turns out if you split the vote by race, white men and white women voted majority for Trump. Black men, black women, Latino men, Latino women, and all others all voted majority for Democrats. That's the split there. White people for Trump, everybody else not for Trump. And the numbers are pretty stark, pretty astonishing, actually. Especially amongst black women. 88%. I've seen some things showing it higher than 90% for Democrats, where even though white men and white women went for Trump, they only went for Trump by 51 and 57%. And it's not to say that Trump can win entirely with just the white vote. A lot of voters saw through the charade, including many white women. Yeah, the only demographic that voted higher for Kamala this time than Joe Biden last time is unmarried, college-educated white women, a.k.a. childless cat ladies. The only one. Okay, so split by race, white people voted for Trump, non-white people voted for Kamala. But again, you know, it's not that Trump could have won just with the white vote. He actually diminished his share of the white vote since 2016, I believe. And he wouldn't have won without a sizable portion of black men and Latinos voting for him. Latino men voted 45% for Trump. Latino women, 36%, so much higher shares than any Republican in the past. Black men voted 23% for Donald Trump, while still extremely low, way higher than any other Republican in recorded history, basically, at least since polling started. All right, so that's the split by race. If you split it by religion, a very similar pattern emerges from Uber Boyo on X. It was hotly debated all year about picking a side between Jews or Muslims. Turns out both of them abandon you in your hour of need. If you're splitting by religion, Protestants, Catholics, Mormons, and other Christians. So every Christian denomination went to Trump by a majority, while Jewish, Muslim, something else, and atheist went to Kamala. So it's almost like these two charts represent a very stark reality. That's between like white Christian people and everybody else. It's just what the stats are telling us, folks. And again, if you look at this split, it is astonishing. The almost complete support for Kamala that's present in black women, 92%, according to this chart. 92% of black women voted for Kamala, just 7% for Trump. Whereas white men and white women, you know, eked out the majority, and still black men only at 23. Now, this person posted this. She's obviously a leftist. As per usual, white women vote for Trump, while black women remain the backbone of ethics and justice for this country. Yeah, nothing says ethics and justice like voting 92%. A population, 92% of a population voting for one political party every year continuously for all of time. That's an ethical and moral and principled stance. You can just put whoever in front of us, just put a D next to their name and we'll vote for them. That's our ethics. Incredible. I think it's so funny the way they praise where they go. American people are just telling us they'd rather have a felon than a black woman in charge. And it's like, look, just because you see everybody in terms of immutable characteristics, just because you decide right and wrong and good and evil and everything, just because your entire worldview is split and obsessed with and dictated entirely by sex and race, doesn't mean anybody else thinks that way. But they project that onto us. And if you don't vote for the cackling maniacal idiot, it must be because you hate black women. Sure. go with that, run with that. I saw somebody else post that. The real question is, how are black women so out of step with the rest of the country? It's because they're so much more ethical and justice focused than us, I'm sure. I'm sure that's what it is. And here's another chart that, again, tells you how powerful this Trump movement is, tells you how insurmountable the patriotism of the MAGA movement has become. Political ad spending across swing states. The only place where they're even remotely similar was in Pennsylvania, where Democrats spent $109 million and Trump spent $102. So a lot of money spent in Pennsylvania. Everybody recognized that was the keystone to the whole thing. But in Michigan, Democrats spent $81 million to Trump's $18. In Georgia, Democrats spent $58 million to Trump's $29. In Wisconsin, they spent $49 million to Trump's $15. In Arizona, Democrats spent $44 million to Trump's $17. In North Carolina, they spent $28 million. And this number's so small, I can't even see it. I guess they spent, what does that even say? $3.2 million, something like that? I'm going to zoom in here. Why does it say 32? Why is the, okay, is this chart wrong? I don't understand. Okay, this number's the total. So, yeah, Trump spent so little in North Carolina and Nevada, they didn't even have room to put the number he spent. Okay, so he probably spent less than $1 million or something in Nevada and North Carolina. And by the way, Trump won every single one of these states. Trump won every single one of the swing states, despite being outspent in every single one of them. In places like Michigan, outspent by a factor of 4. Places in like Georgia, outspent by nearly a factor of 2. Wisconsin outspent by almost a factor of 5. So just massively outspent. And yet Trump wins. Pretty incredible. And Tim Carney posts that at TP Carney by saying it's so sad that campaign spending determines outcome. Of course, saying that sarcastically, because in this case it didn't. It didn't. We beat the money. We beat the funding. We beat the billionaires. We beat the deep pockets of the Democrats through sheer truth. By just telling the truth, by sheer tenacity. So absolutely incredible. Massively outspent across the board, and yet victory entirely in the hands of the Trump campaign. And returning again to the topic of bellwether counties, you can see once again the outlying issue was 2020, where in blue it's highlighted that the person who won the bellwether also won the general election. And that's pretty consistent across the board from all the way back to 1984 up till 2020, when suddenly Trump won every bellwether county except for one. And yet it went to Biden somehow and for some reason. Very absurd. But once again, just like the 20 million missing votes from 2020 to 24, it's because the Democrats cheated to a degree that I don't even think we realized. I mean, we knew they cheated, but I'd always said it wasn't a mass movement. It was just certain counties and certain states, a couple extra 100,000 votes here, a couple extra 100,000 votes there, and you rig the whole nationwide election. It turns out it was way bigger than we even thought. It was way bigger than we even expected, with 20 million fraudulent votes probably cast in 2020. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We're announcing Ultimate Hydroforce. Now, this is not just electrolytes, okay? This is really a superfood, similar to Vitamin Mineral Fusion, but with a whole bunch more electrolytes and other things in there. It would take me a long time to go through the ingredients, 3 pages of them here, and what they do. But it's got super high-quality vitamin C, niacin, vitamin B6, vitamin B12, it's got pathogenic acid, vitamin B5, so key, calcium, magnesium, zinc, manganese, chloride, sodium, and more. Potassium, the list goes on and on. And it's all the highest quality sources of it on top of that. And then it funds my broadcast and the crew and all of us continuing on. So we need your support. If InfoWars shuts down November 13th to continue on, regardless, it's going to help us up our game if InfoWars survives. So please go check out this amazing supplement, the highest quality you're going to find, with big discounts and other great supplements at thealexjonesstore.com. We sought out the very best, highest quality, rehydrating product for pre-workout, post-workout, you name it. And we found a top company with top reviews that would let us private label it. And it's beyond just hydration. It's beyond just getting your electrolytes. It's a superfood. It's a pre-workout. It's a post-workout. You've got to go read all the ingredients that are in this bad boy. And then look at the insane low prices, between 30 and 50% off, depending on how many canisters you get of Ultimate HydroForce. Now, again, go look at the ingredients for yourself and the quality of the ingredients and the amount of the ingredients. This baby is next level. This is beyond anything out there at anywhere near this low price. As you know, I always seek to bring you the very best supplements possible so you get a great response, great effects, and you want to come back and get them again. Like a restaurant wants to have tasty, good, delicious food, so there's a line out the door. Well, I've got to admit some false advertising, and next time we're reproduce this, or my sponsors do, we're going to probably have to change the name. And why is that? Well, it's simple. This is called Ultimate HydroForce Electrolyte Drink Mix. But it's really a superfood, post-workout, pre-workout. That's why it's Ultimate HydroForce and more, I guess you say. Hydration, energy, vitamins, minerals, health, immune system. Get your HydroForce exclusively at thealexjonesstore.com.
As you can see, I'm not just MAGA, I'm Dark MAGA.
A few weeks ago, when I saw Elon Musk in Pennsylvania with Trump at Butler, and he had that Dark MAGA hat on, I said, we've got to have our own. And we've come out with it. Yeah, we can put one out that, you know, just says Make America Great Again, and that's available at thealexjonesstore.com. But I personally like this one, Murdered Out. It fits great, and it funds the InfoWar and supports President Trump. And if you don't like Murdered Out, we got it white on black. So get yours right now and a bunch of other great designs of hoodies and t-shirts and top-of-the-line supplements that all fund the Second American Revolution at thealexjonesstore.com. Let me show you a few more of these. Now that the FDA admits fluoride does lower your IQ and give you cancer and infertility, it's a great time to wear one of these beautiful hats, and it's a great way to start a conversation and warn people. Here's the classic Make America Great Again Murdered Out, and we've got the Save the Frogs, over 50 designs, all at thealexjonesstore.com, and it keeps us on air and it spreads the word. Please go to alexjonesstore.com and get your Patriot gear.
It's the American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to take your calls up the third hour. Continue to talk about what we learned from the election. Also, there are a few examples I have of the resistance, and it's just like, it's exhausting even talking about it. The governor of Massachusetts being like, I'm going to take executive action to protect our precious illegals from deportation, which is just nonsense. It's just nonsense. Acting like you're going to, well, first of all, acting like you think states' rights is a thing, very funny. But also acting like you have the power to do that. You don't. You just don't. What do you think is going to happen? Trump's going to send in ICE, and the Massachusetts National Guard is going to fight them? What do you? The federal government outranks the state government when it comes to immigration. You have no power here. And then Letitia James is promising to continue to pose an insurrectionist threat to Donald Trump. It's almost just exhausting. So it's like they're They're kind of trying to get the band back together. You know, they're kind of trying to keep the nonsense going, but they just don't have it in them anymore, I don't think. I really don't. There's a post from, I thought I had it. Andrew Torba posted a selection from New York Times where they're like, here it is. The New York Times newsletter this morning is a complete and total demoralization. This is the selection from the New York Times newsletter. Trump's first term turned some Democrats into activists. Now many of them are struggling to muster the energy to do it again. Some women wondered if the glass ceiling would ever break. The election result affirmed what many black women believed about America, that it would rather send a felon than a woman of color to the White House. I guess it depends. Yeah, they're just too tired. And it's fine. Look, it's fine. Take a nap. Go take a nap, Democrats. Go lay on the beach. Take a page out of Joe Biden's book. Go flop on the ground somewhere, okay? Look, I think we did it. I think we did it, you guys. I think we outlasted them. They do not have the energy to put up a fight anymore. these weak, pathetic scumbags. Think about how little they actually know and care. Like Alex Jones, InfoWars, those of us fighting with everything we've got for this like impossible dream of resistance against the New World Order. We have been carrying on for 30 years without even a glimmer of hope. For 30 years, you fight tooth and nail. No kudos, no celebration, no, you know, major victory to speak of for decades. Just striving against all odds. And what happens? It pays off. We get victory. We have Ron Paul and Elon Musk and RFK Jr. getting the fluoride out of the water and looking into the pharmaceutical industry and cutting the federal government, dismantling the Fed. Like, I think we won, you guys. I think in this great chess match of American politics, it's not about who gets the most pieces. It's about who stays on the board the longest. And that's us. They're exhausted. After 4 years where they're constantly being celebrated, constantly being lauded as the resistance, constantly, you know, reinforced in their beliefs and, you know, people doing extreme things to encourage them. I mean, hell, they have their rioters out there smashing things up and getting bailed out and getting paid tens of thousands of dollars by the government as an apology for arresting them in the first place. I mean, they get every break, they get every advantage, and they can't maintain resistance for 5 years. They've given up. They have surrendered, whether they admit it or not. They're too tired. They're too sleepy. They just can't keep it up. They're not made for this, folks. We are. We are. We have been. That's why we're winning. That's why we will win. They can't make it 5 years. We're going 30 years, and we're just pissed off. We can't do it more. I mean, really, and I could go on and on. I mean, the amount of money these people make, I mean, it's never enough for them. And with every advantage and every benefit and everything to gain, they have essentially either given up or gone legitimately insane. And again, I'm not even showing you the real, like, liberal meltdown compilations because they're sad. They are actually sad. There's one video of a woman. And she's like freaking out so much, she like slams her head into the wall and is like running around. And the guy's filming, just being like, I got to film this because no one's going to believe that you did this to yourself. And she's just screaming and literally like flailing like she's possessed. Like these people are possessed. Their minds are broken. Their spirits are destroyed. Their will is disintegrated after one little setback. And it just shows you as you compare that. What we in the liberty movement had put up with for so long.
these people just don't have the will. They don't have the endurance necessary to achieve victory. They're coddled and weak. And even when everything's handed to them, they feel disheartened. Even when everything is being gifted to them on a silver platter, they're demoralized. We, on the other hand, have to fight for everything, are constantly being cheated against and robbed and scammed and sued and threatened with investigation. And we're just like, bring it on. Bring it on. Because we can't outlast you. And the day belongs to those who endure it. Really is incredible. Really is fun. Again, just looking at the numbers, it's pretty astonishing from Carl Benjamin, Sargon of Akkad. Everyone knows. Everyone. It's obvious, undeniable, outrageous. We know what they did. We know why they did it. And we know they'll never be punished for it. Well, you can take that last sentence out of your mouth, sir. This is America after all. Justice demands they be punished for it. He shows the Democratic voters as a... in population, 2004, 59 million, 2008, 69 million, 2012, 65 million, 2016, 65 million, 2020, 81 million, 2024, 64 million. One of these is not like another. One of them is the result of outrageous fraud. So, and Baked Alaska responds to that, yet people were punished for asking legitimate questions about it. Yeah, story of our modern world. Obviously, bizarre occurrences demanding an explanation, and then you get punished for asking for one. So, I mean, what we're learning here is that not only is fraud in 2020 real, it was significantly larger than we even expected. But the shift really is astonishing. We showed the map yesterday of the red arrows and just showing that across the board. And again, this is, I should have grabbed the NPR segment because it's fun hearing them have to describe it. It's fun hearing the Washington, D.C. based NPR political expert have to lay out in that NPR voice how Donald Trump just absolutely dominated and made us all look like weak little rodents as he swept gloriously across the country in a wave of victory. It's very fun. It's very fun hearing them try to rationalize that. Red wave is an understatement. Trump has increased support across the electorate. Republican margin over Democrats change since 2020 by demographic group. So you see the red arrows are demographics that shifted right. Left would be shifted Democrat. Here's the people that shifted right. White non-college men, white non-college women, white people, males, people aged 45 to 64, white college men, females, people in the age range of 30 through 45, white college women actually went left, but people 18 through 29 went significantly to the right. Hispanics went even more significantly to the right. Asians went even more significantly to the right. And blacks, despite being way to the left to start off with, also shifted to the right. So the only people that shifted to the left would be 65-year-olds and white college women, which, again, is just, it's just perfect. It's just, it is perfect. The only groups that became more liberal, more Democrat than 2020 are boomers, are people that, like, actually don't know how to use the internet, people 65 or older who still get their news, who grew up in a world where you could trust the mainstream media and have found it impossible to break out of that mindset. So brainwashed old people who watch MSN and CNN with the false assumption that they're somehow balanced, and propagandized, lonely, single, college educated, right? Propagandized women who were told abortion is the biggest thing in the world. Pretty perfect. Pretty ideal, like pretty significant demographic breakdown. Again, men between 18 to 29 shifted 30 points to the right, folks. Let me say that again. Men aged 18 to 29 shifted 30 points to the right. That is a red wave. That's only going to get bigger because these are the young men. People are trying to rationalize this, but they're operating from a position of despising young men, especially young white men from the outset. So they're trying to pathologize the masculine response to stimulus. All right, I'll get into that in just a second. But the reason this is important, the reason it's worth it to understand just how significant this shift to the right is because this happened during a campaign where Trump's rhetoric was more severe than before, talking about mass deportations, talking about all the things he's going to do. That's what they voted for, okay? He didn't temper his message. He didn't move towards the middle. It's not because he shifted left that they all came to meet him in the middle. No. He shifted to the right. They came with him, okay? It's young people, meaning that this movement can and will grow if fostered and paid attention to. And the reason it is important is because it is a key aspect of the argument that we have the mandate. That this was not a fluke. This was not close. This was not by a razor's edge and, well, you know, he barely got enough. But no, this was a bombshell knockout blow. This was a red wave. We have the mandate from the people and from heaven itself to do what needs to be done. So the conversation we talked about a lot yesterday between mercy and vengeance, between do we lead by example and bring about unity, or do we just crush our enemies now that we have them? Like we talked about that being sort of the back and forth, and the shift right by every demographic save two. The shift right in every state, in every city, in every county. The shift right, especially by young people and young men in particular, should be a bolstering factor, a boon to the argument that we have a mandate. People want us to set things right. Now is not the time for timidity. Now is not the time for glad handing. I mean, where's the story? I printed it out just because it's so typical. It's Chuck Schumer. Here it is. Old Chucky boy. Chuck Schumer urges Senate Republican majority to embrace bipartisanship. Yeah, you know what I just figured out? You know what I just realized, says Chuck Schumer? You know what's really great is bipartisanship, actually, now that you're in charge. I think bipartisanship should be the priority. I know we've been running roughshod over your every objection. I know when we get even a modicum of power, use it to ruthlessly destroy you in every way that we can. But now that you're in charge, I think we should maybe find common ground. I think we should maybe meet in the middle. Get stuffed, Chuck Schumer. Okay? Bend the knee. Realize that you are on the wrong side of history in every possible way. We can make this bipartisanship you waking up from your delusion and actually serving the American people for once. Or you can go to jail with the rest of them. Again, that's the important part to me about recognizing and acknowledging and talking about this massive shift right by every demographic. The fact that the Trump campaign ran on mass deportations. They ran on all the stuff that now they're going to cry about and call fascist or whatever. No, it's just imposing the law, bringing us back to a traditional rule by law under the Constitution. As America was intended. Everybody's for it. Everybody wants this. So let's get it done. Let's get it done. As Andrew Torba at Based Torba on X says, he posts a graphic showing again that the Democrats in 2022 overwhelmingly wanted to find the unvaccinated, lock the unvaccinated at home, send the unvaccinated to quarantine camps. About 50% of them said yes to that suggestion. They also wanted about 30% of them wanted to take children away from unvaccinated parents. And 50% of them wanted to fine and imprison critics of the vaccine. Okay, so that's the other side. That's the extremism that represents the basic position of the Democrats. And as Andrew Torba argues, as these people call for unity without any modicum of repentance or humility, we must never forget that half of them wanted to send us to camps and our children taken from us for refusing their clot shot. Our victory over the next 4 years must be so total that they never get anywhere near power ever again. And we can do it comfortably and confidently, knowing that the younger generations are even more extreme than we are. And that's a beautiful thing. Now, again, what they're doing is trying to pathologize this. They're trying to figure this out like they're space aliens who hate the subjects that they're studying. Okay, so losing with some typically means winning with others and vice versa. Losing big with everyone across the board is nearly unprecedented and hard to conceive of as even possible. And this again shows the shift left or right. It's a different way to graph the information we presented before. But this is even more stark because it's showing that actually in 2020, the shift was left for practically everybody except for Hispanics and college educated. Whereas in 2024, it shifted back to the right. So this not only shows that people are shifting to the right, it shows a reversal of the previous trend where people were shifting to the left. Now, in order to wrap their minds around this, but remember, it's like you're trying to solve a puzzle with the key element of the puzzle missing. You really can't do it. The key piece of the puzzle that they're missing is empathy for and understanding of the people they're trying to study. So they cannot acknowledge that it might be their own lies that are driving people away. They cannot acknowledge that it is the relentless demonization of white people, men, and young men in particular, that might be driving them away. They can't acknowledge that because then they would have to stop hating us. So instead, they have to pathologize what's going on here. Ishan Theror, which I assume is a name, says 18 to 34 demographic shift to me is the most startling. At the risk of painting with a far too broad brush, it's an entire generation that's trending towards post-literacy that doesn't read full articles, doesn't read books, gets its information from bits and bobs of videos while scrolling. This is true not just of young people, of course, but it's reshaping the political landscape. So according to them, the reason people are shifting to the right is because they're stupid and lazy, I guess, is what they're saying. They're not sophisticated enough to understand. See, they don't read books. They just get their information from the internet, not like us, the college-educated morons. We understand. Especially when it comes to young men, they're like trying to figure, they're like, what could this be? What could be behind it? Is it because they're not reading enough? It's like, it's because you make a central pillar of your entire platform hating them. Why would any of them vote for you? Why do any of them vote for you? You hate them. Your entire, and not just the rhetoric. I mean, the policies you put forward are designed to despoil them, to rob them of their birthright. So, like, you want to consider that might have an impact? See, I think it's the opposite. I think it is the exact opposite. I think the most well-informed people in the country are the ones shifting farthest to the right. I think it's the fact that young men are not satisfied with scrolling on Instagram. They're not happy to be distracted by video games and, you know, whatever Yuval Noah Harari wants them to, you know, virtual twiddling of their thumbs until they die. I think young men are ambitious. I think they want to have a civilization that's worth participating in. I think they're smart and can see through the lies. And I think they're going to the side that recognizes and acknowledges and appreciates them. You could try that. You could try doing that. You could try providing them a path forward, suggesting that you actually want to have a civilization, a society, a nation that celebrates and respects their talents and abilities. It doesn't lie to them continuously, doesn't hate them, isn't writing laws to discriminate against them, then maybe they'll like you more. But I don't think you should. I think you should keep doing what you're doing. I think lefties should keep doing exactly what they've been doing, demonizing the smartest, most ambitious, testosterone-fueled generation of all time. It's going to be glorious. Generation Alpha is coming. The Zoomers are going to look timid in comparison. So yeah, they can't figure it out. And by the way, the reason Trump won is because he genuinely respects, listens to, gives responsibility and purpose to young men, including his son, Barron. We talked about this a little bit, but this is just some more inside info. Eric Cortalesa says, have you ever, he's quoting Trump, quote, have you talked this over with Barron? He asked, referring to his 18-year-old son. No, sir, the young staffer told him. Call Barron and see what he thinks and let me know. After scrambling to contact Trump's youngest son, who Melania has shielded from the political fray, Bruschwitz got Barron's sign-off, and their plan was to start with Aiden Ross, a young provocateur known mostly for collabs with celebrities on live streams of video games. The podcast strategy was set in motion. Like with all things Trump, he relied on his trusted family to serve as an arbiter within the operation and guide his strategic decision-making. In this case, it was Barron. Yeah, Barron was in charge of, he was responsible for the podcast strategy. It was a huge, huge bonus to Donald Trump in the final months of the campaign, something Kamala Harris tried to mimic and failed utterly. And in a way, you know, he does in his personal life. And I admit, I love Trump's imperial inclinations. I know I shouldn't. I'm a libertarian. I don't, you know, I'm not a big fan of the Imperium exactly. But I do love that he is just like a genuine patriarch. He's like a genuine godfather where, like, as soon as his son comes of age, he's like, I must put him in charge of something. I must give him responsibility and learn from him. And he's talking about putting his daughter, Tiffany, is married to a Lebanese Christian. Trump is talking about putting his father in charge of, like, as an ambassador to Lebanon, replacing the Israel-born IDF soldier that represents America today in these negotiations. But I love that it's like his family occupying all of these positions. Look at that kid. I'm telling you, folks, Barron is going to be our king. He's going to be our king. But yeah, you know, it represents, you know, the wider reality of Donald Trump represents an old school American way of doing things where you put trust and respect and appreciation on young men. You go, they know what they're doing. They're smart. They're ambitious. They're driven. What they need is purpose. What they need is a destination. What they need is to know that even if they're just going to work for some company and going home and having a family, like, at least in that basic responsibility, they're participating as one part of a larger civilization working towards beautifying and rectifying the world. Right now, they've been stripped of all of that. They've been demonized for their ambitions. Their motivation is being crushed, and the lefties are wondering why young men are running away. It's not that complicated.
Therapists in the U.S. say they are seeing increasing numbers of patients with what they call Donald Trump anxiety disorder.
Trump anxiety disorder.
Trump derangement syndrome.
Trump derangement syndrome is clinically real.
It doesn't merely affect individuals, but entire political parties, rendering them unrecognizable.
1 minute, they're perfectly normal. The next, rabid.
The veneer of civilization is evaporating quickly. Families and culture are collapsing. And godless leftists are behaving just like zombies of modern lore.
You can't trust your mother.
Get the hell out of here!
Get the fuck out of here!
Your best friend.
I get that camera out of my face.
The neighbor next door.
Psychologist Dr. Stuart Bassman says for his clients, it started the morning after the election.
Doctors are seeing patients suffering from Trump anxiety disorder.
A number of people are manifesting what I would call post-traumatic stress disorder.
An overpowering fear that President Trump represents the end of the world.
Pray it doesn't happen to you.
Land of the dead!
Rabid.
White males.